something that's almost obvious to do, but nobody has done before him. But you know, it's a long time ago, so I don't know if it's obvious or not. So basically, he said, well, you guys all know that you shouldn't put all the eggs in one basket, right? And that's kind of like a rule of thumb here. But I guess what he demonstrated is that pretty rigorously, you actually have to do that to actually achieve a better risk-adjusted return. What I mean is, you know, given a certain risk, how do I get the most money or return out of it? You know, you should do more diversification. You know, he kind of gave a rigorous financial justification for that. Okay, so what's our model here? So I'm going to assume I have N risky assets. You know, you can think of them as stocks, right? So you wouldn't know if they're going to go up or down tomorrow. It's just random. And these risky assets have a mean return, and I'm just going to write it in a vector form R. So if you see a lowercase letter that doesn't have a subscript, I mean it's a vector. Okay? So the individual entry is going to look like this. And then the covariance matrix, and that's the key here, that you know these risky assets actually, to some extent, interact with each other, right? You know, there may be some kind of relationship. If this asset goes up, the other asset will go down, right? Things like that. So let's call this variance-covariance matrix sigma. This is sigma, yeah. Okay, and I'm going to assume that this is invertible. And in reality, it has to be, right? You know, if you think about it, if it's a matrix, you know, let's say if I use, you know, S&P 500, I have 500 stuff, this is going to be a 500 by 500 matrix. It's actually pretty hard to make it not invertible, right? You know, most likely it's going to be. So I'm just going to assume that. You know, there are ways to do all these things, assuming that this thing is not invertible, but I'm not going to get into that. Okay, so you all know that, well, buying stocks is a risky business, right? So all these returns, they're random variables. And it's pretty clear that if I build a portfolio, okay? If I build a portfolio and I assign weights to all these stocks, so let me call the returns, those are random variables, so R1 to Rn. And I'm gonna assign weights W1 to Wn. Does it make sense what I'm trying to do here? Like, and I'm assuming, you know, these weights have to add up to one, right? You know, I have a certain amount of money. I'm going to put, I'm going to basically put R1 W1 in this stock and RN WN in that stock. And I can calculate the weights and I can, you know, build a portfolio, right? Okay. So, and it should be clear that the return of the portfolio should be the sum of these kind of a weighted return here, right? Weighted average here. Does that make sense? And of course, you know, we know expectation is linear. So if I take expectation, the expected return, okay, I'm going to call it R sub P, is going to be a weighted average of the mean returns, right? And I can use a vector notation. Okay, I'm just going to use prime as the transpose notation. Okay. Now, of course, because all these things are random, right, I have to talk about, say, the variance of the portfolio. Okay? And the variance of the portfolio, well, that's just nothing but the variance of the RP here, right? So you would have a WIRI. And how you take the variance of a sum? Well, you have all those variance of those individual assets, but you also have those covariance terms, right? Together, I can write something like a sum like this, WI, WJ, and if I take, this will be covariance of return I and return J. Make sense? When I and J are the same, this becomes variance, right? When I and J are different, these are covariances. And I can write this in terms of the matrix notation.
W transpose sigma, right? Sigma here being the variance covariance matrix. Does that make sense? Does this make sense so far? Okay. All right. So, and again, this is, I guess, this same stuff if you do any kind of model, right? You build a model, you know, this is our model, essentially. You know. I assume there are endless key assets. You know, they have the mean returns. They have some variance covariance matrix. And the next step is just, you know, what do we assume? Right? What are the assumptions? And there are a lot of assumptions here because this is a pretty, this is probably the simplest model you can build to describe, well, the stock market, right? Pretty complicated, but, you know, and, you know, in a sense, we are assuming this thing is one period, right? There's only one random variable. It's not a stochastic process. There's not a time variant variable in it. It's just one step. I invest a day, tomorrow I see the result. Okay, so it's pretty simple. But there's still a lot of assumptions here, which I guess the biggest assumption here is that I actually know these two things. Huge assumptions, okay? You know, do you know the expected returns of individual stocks? It's actually very hard to know, right? I mean, if I know the expected return, why do I really need these things? I mean, just, you know, bet on the one that has the highest expected return, right? If I know on average what tomorrow is going to be, it's very hard to know this. And also the variance covariance matrix, there's more certainty to get the variance covariance matrix using historic data, right? I know how the stock prices moved, let's say over last year, so I can calculate this variance covariance matrix, right? And the assumption here is that, I guess, you know, once you're this stock, you vary, you know, as much as you did before, right? In a sense, there's nothing that changed much in your fundamental values. Okay, you know, there are several companies you can see that, you know, Apple, it used to be a growth stock, right? So you would expect its stock price to be very volatile. But now that, you know, it has the highest market capitalization, then you don't assume that it's going to vary that much, right? And if you look at stock prices of Apple, you know, it didn't really move much last year, if you look at the beginning and the end. So, you know, companies can change, so, you know, a growth stock can become a value stock. And certainly you would expect the variance covariance, you know, how these the prices change, well, change over time, right? But, you know, it's easier to know this than to know this, okay? Because I guess you can say the stocks don't change overnight, right? But what kind of return it will give you, who knows? Right? We all watched Wolf of Wall Street, right? You know, remember this guy who's like, oh, nobody knows the stock market is going to go up or down or sideways tomorrow, right? You know, you just have to screw the clients. You know? Remember that movie. Okay, so what are the other assumptions? The other assumptions that, okay, so my weights, and I'm using it. I keep doing this. If I use this, I don't need this anymore. I assume all my weights are real numbers. Okay, and that's a big assumption. I can't really buy pi shares of a stock, right? You know, although, you know, now, you know, for a company, the outstanding shares may be in billions, but still, you cannot have any real number of years. But I'm going to assume that I can own any fractional share of a company, and this number can be negative. What does it mean negative? It means I sell this. And you don't even have to own a stock to sell it. You can sell it without owning a stock. At the end of the day, you pay it back. This is called shorting. But I'm not going to worry too much about it, okay, because this is a math talk. I'm just going to say W can be positive or negative. Okay? And I'm assuming that the investor here is a price taker, which means this investor, whatever he or she does in the market, it's not going to change the prices. Okay? In reality, it's not going to be true. If you imagine if one of the weights is really big, then, you know, it's like somebody asking for, I don't know, tomorrow's linear algebra test answer, and I'm bidding $100 there. And you can imagine the prices would just go up if more people are bidding, if more people want this, right? So by assuming that the investor is a price taker, I'm saying that the investor's decision will not affect the prices. And fourth, there is no bid-ask spread. OK,
Okay, what this assumption means is I essentially can buy and sell any asset at the same price. Of course, that's not the case, right? No. You can imagine the buying price is going to be a little higher than the selling price, or you know, who's going to make the money, right? So, but you know, for the modeling purpose, I'm going to assume there's no bid-ask spread, and also there's no transaction cost. And again, these are a bunch of assumptions here, but I would say this one is the biggest one. Okay. So what's the objective here? What do you think the objective should be if I have a stock market like this? If I want to build a portfolio, what should my objective be? Should I go for the highest return?
With the least risk.
With the least risk, right. Exactly. So. And let me put it this way. I'm going to put it the reverse way. It doesn't matter which way you do. It's just easier for me to do it this way. I'm going to minimize the risk and given a certain return target, okay? You know, let's say I want 5% or 10% return. What's the minimum amount of risk I can take, okay? What's a good proxy for risk? Okay, risk, that's like a nebulous concept. What proxy should I use? What kind of math concept should I use here?
Variance,
right? Exactly. So, now, this is not the only one, right? This is the most common one. I'm going to try to minimize the variance here. And I'm just going to put a 1/2 here, just so that the math is simple. You'll see when I take this derivative. You know, I guess it helps. But if I'm minimizing this, I'm certainly minimizing the one without the 1/2, right? And this is going to look like 1/2 W, and then this is going to be function of the weights. Okay? And again, you can have different other objectives, right? Give you one example. There's this concept called semi-variance, right? In a sense that, if my return is going to go above the expected return, who cares how much it varies, right? What I'm worried about is when the return is going below expected return, then I really care about how low it can go, right? So when you calculate variance, you can have, when you take the sum here, you can have something that says, okay, when R is greater than or equal to a certain level, then I'm going to calculate the variance. Okay, but when, if it doesn't, then I don't care. If it goes above, I don't care. But if it goes under, then I do care about how much it varies. Right. So that's one example. Okay. So this is the objective. I'm trying to minimize this function. And the constraints are, I have a target return. Again, this is set before you do all these things, right? I'm going to retire in 50 years. I need 5% in my account so that I can retire comfortably. So that's a return, right? And again, this is going to be a function of the weights. And the other one, the other one is kind of a simple one. Right? You just need to do the weights to add up to 1. And I'm just going to call it H. This function should be H of W. Okay. So I've got the modeling done, I've got the assumptions done, I've got the objective. What kind of problem is this?
Linear programming?
Not linear programming, quadratic programming.
Quadratic.
Because there's quadratic here, yeah. Right. And it's a constraint problem, so technically you could just put it in MATLAB and just let it work out, right? Even the Excel can do that, okay? So it's not too hard of a problem to do, but I'm just going to actually grind through some of the math and show you some explicit results, I guess. So what methods would I use if I try to do it by hand here? Going back to your multivariable calculus or vector calculus class, what's the method you should use here? If this is a constrained optimization problem? The Grunge. Is that the Grange or the Grunge?
Lagrange.
Lagrange multipliers, right? So I want this to be true. So, you can kind of see that this is a quadratic here. If I take the derivative, the 2 drops up, it cancels out. So the derivative is going to look like this, right? Again, it's going to be a vector. And this one here, I will have lambda 1 of what? R, right? Right. And... If I multiply multiply both sides by the inverse. And again, I assume that I can. Let me write it this way. Let me write the constant thing right there. Right. I assume the various covariance matrix is invertible here. Right. Actually, it's more than invertible here. What else do you think it is? Beyond well, more than just invertibility. It's also, you know, I'm trying to bring up all these concepts you've learned in linear algebra. It's also positive definite. Okay. By definition, it's semi-positive definite or non-negative definite? Positive semi-definite. That's the word. Yes. Why? Why is that? Why is this variance covariance matrix at least positive semi-definite? What?
Otherwise, you cannot get the local
minimum. That's true, yeah. Well, but so how do I get this? You know, that this is what I do, right? Let's see if I can remember this one. R. Again, this R here, I should probably put it back. This R here is the expectation of the capital R, right? And as you can see, this once you have this form, it has to be positive semi-definite, right? And if you know it's invertible, then you know it's definitely positive definite, okay? Okay, so we can invert this, so we have that the weight I should put is essentially going to be this form. And this form is actually pretty interesting if you think about it. This is, well, one set of stocks or returns, if you want. And this is another set, right? It's kind of a combination of, it's really just a linear combination of these two things, right? It's not quite, you know, lambda 1, lambda 2 don't have to add up to 1, but you can easily just scale them so that it's divided by lambda 1 plus lambda 2 or something like that, right? So you get this weighted sum of these two funds, okay? And if you want, you can actually grind through the math to figure out what lambda 1 and lambda 2 should be, and it turns out it's going to look like this. And now I'm just going to write this in terms of, because we set a return at this point, right? I'm going to write it as a function of this return. You'll see why. And